clean up and go on to the end of the evening. And it took me four
days to do it in Vancouver. So I'll try to just summarize, thank you, major points which really impact upon our own spiritual lives from the Ramayana. The first point that I would like to take up has to do with the influence that the maidservant Mantra had on Kaikai, and how she was able to change the mind of a woman who was quite intelligent, quite cultured, quite reverential to Lord Ramchandra, and to create in her such a state of mind that she could actually become quite opposed to or hostile to Lord Ramchandra. So this is very interesting because it's a very amazing study in the psychology of a particular woman and how another woman, namely Mantara, was able to impact and act upon Kaikai. As mentioned before, Kaikai, first of all, she was a princess from the time she was born. She was the daughter of King Kaikai, and highly cultured, well-educated. She was the favorite queen of King Dasharatha, and she was very much admired and respected in the entire kingdom. Her son was known as Bharat. Kaushalya's son was Lord Ramachandra, and Sumitra's two sons were twins. Satrughna and can you help me out?
Lakshman,
yeah. Still too early in the morning, I guess, for me. So Lakshman, Satrughna, Lord Ramchandra, and Lord Bharat were the sons. Kaikai loved Lord Ramachandra as much as she loved Bharat. She spoke of him in very glowing, laudable, praiseworthy terms, so that it wasn't as if there was some type of a strain or a tension or some stress between her and Lord Ramchandra. Nothing could please her more than to see Lord Ramchandra become the next king. So, as we know, just to recap a little part of the story, King Dasharatha was getting old and he felt that he could die at any day, and it was important for him to have a successor. And in the tradition of kings, usually the successor is the eldest son, assuming that he has the qualifications to rule the kingdom. If he is unqualified, for example, he may not have intelligence, or he may have some deformity, blind, or what have you, then the next eldest son becomes the king. We have this example in the dynasty of King Dhritarashtra, King Shantanu. Dhritarashtra was born first, and then came Pandu, and then came Vidura. But Dhritarashtra was born blind, and he was not actually fit to rule the kingdom. And they wanted what you call a full-service king, one who could defend, one who could protect, and one who could be an aggressor when necessary, one who could be an all-around full-time king, one who could be involved in the administration and who had the eyes to see and be able to act upon knowledge which came to him through his ears, his eyes, and his mind. So, of course, after Dasharatha, he went to his ministers, and he asked them who would be a suitable candidate to be my successor, because once I'm going, then I'm gone. and I want the kingdom to be in the best of hands. So it was unanimously approved that the Lord Ramchandra would be the person. He was qualified by his skill, his weapon in weaponry, his knowledge of scripture, his likability amongst the members of the entire kingdom. He was loved, he was adored, he was respected, he was venerated. So yes, Ramchandra should become the next king. So that was decided, and after it was decided, it was begun to broadcast. In those days, they didn't have the television, they didn't have radio, they didn't have the things that we have. So they had town criers who would go through the streets and say, Lord Ramachandra will be the regent. Lord Ramachandra will be the regent king. Regent king means he's ready to step in when his father leaves, or if his father wants to take vacation, or father wants to retire at any time, and he's the one. Regent means the next king. So everybody who heard this was just jumping with joy and so full of satisfaction. They all wanted this to happen. However, on the balcony of Kakayi's apartment was the maidservant Mantara, and when she heard this and she saw all the people rejoicing and happy and applauding and celebrating, she became very, very upset and very disturbed. And we need to see her psychology. She is Kakayi's. This happened since Kakayi was a little girl. She was the chief maidservant. Being the chief maidservant, also she was a hunchback. And she was not very pretty. She was not a beautiful woman. So she had a very pronounced inferiority complex. People with inferiority complexes are very fearful of losing position. They're always worried that maybe somebody will step into my position as the chief maidservant. I want my queen to remain in the highest possible position. And actually, she was very well honored, very well liked, and I should say loved by King Dasarath. So she became very anxious, very uncertain, very doubtful about this whole situation. So she went into the bedroom of Queen Kakayi, and she says, look at you, just lying there casually, relaxing, and you have no idea what is about to befall you. You have no understanding. Look at you. How could you just rest? Don't you know that Kaushalya's son, Ram, is going to become the next king? So when Kakayi heard this, she said, he is? Well, that's wonderful. There's nothing more beneficial, more glorious for the kingdom. She says, you fool. How could you speak that way? Don't you understand what is afoot? What is happening? Your son Bharat is now in the kingdom of Kakayi visiting his uncle along with his brother, Satrughan. Don't you understand what has happened? They have been sent away so that there would not be any conflict. There would not be any protest. So Kakayi said, protest? My Bharat would never protest against Lord Ramchandra being the next king. Bharat worships him. He loves him. He adores him. What are you talking about? She says, you are so stupid. This is how she was talking to her. She could do that because she was the chief maidservant. Actually, if she was more, you know, distant maidservant, you don't talk that way to the queen. She's the queen. But because she was intimate, you know, there's an old story that familiarity brings contempt or an indifference. So she could speak in a very close fashion to her, familiarly, without respect, if necessary. Because Kakayi did trust her, and did believe in her as being a truly good maidservant. And when I say intimacy, I mean she's in charge of making sure that she has the maidservants to do the hair of Kakayi, to make the garments of Kakayi, to help her dress, to help her bathe. She's in charge of all this. So it's a very responsible position. To polish the crown, you know, all of these things. To make sure that persons come in and sing beautiful ballads, praising her glories. So Muntara had a very prized, respectable position, and she could talk that way to Kakayi. So she said, Kakayi said, what are you talking about? Why are you so opposed to Lord Ramachandra? She said, don't you know what will happen? If Lord Ramachandra, well, she didn't call him Lord. Let me use her terminology. If Ram becomes the king, don't you know what will happen? Bharat will be his biggest his biggest threat. Threat? What do you mean by threat? He says, Bharat is as capable of ruling the kingdom as Ram is ruling the kingdom. Don't you know what will happen? When Ram sees that his position is threatened, don't you know what is the result going to be? What are you talking about? The result will be is that Ram will have Bharat killed. That's what will be. Oh, you're such a fool. How can you speak in such a manner like this? She says, you don't know the psychology of these royals. Once you get into a position, there's always conspiracies going on in the back rooms. She says, don't you understand this? You don't understand this. You're just too be taken with your beauty, looking in the mirror and playing with your eyebrows and your eyelashes and your hair and this and that. You don't know what's really going on. So she began, I'm trying to give a little idea of her mood and her how she was beginning to influence Kakayi. So she worked on her in this way. Everybody, every one of us has a little weakness. Some of us may have more than one weakness. And what she did is she played upon a weakness that Kakayi had. Now Kakayi was born, as I said, a princess. She loved her position. She liked being, you know, a queen. And she did not particularly look forward to the idea of ever being a maid or a servant. That was a fear there. It was something she would not want to happen. So Muntara began to work on that fear. And she said, when Ram becomes the king, his mother will become the queen mother. And since Dasarath, your husband, showed favoritism to you, what do you think she's going to do to you? She's going to get back at you and avenge herself for all those times when she wanted to be with Dasarath, but he was with you. And you know what she will do? She will make you her scullery maid, her servant. You will be cooking for her. You will be washing her clothes. Is that what you want? So she said, you think she would do something like that? Think! You are such a stupid woman. Look at you. You don't know the reality. You don't understand what is the truth. I'm your friend. I've brought you up. I've raised you. I'm your best well-wisher. I want you to stay the queen. I don't want you to become Kausalya's maid. And you don't deserve it either. You have served the king so nicely. You have served this kingdom so well. You are the daughter of a great king. Do you want to be a maidservant? No, of course I don't want to be a maidservant. Well then, you've got to do something. Well, what can I do? Already she got a hold of her. This fear of, you see, it comes from attachment. You get attached to your position. When you get attached to a position, you don't want to lose it. Because losing it means losing a sense of your identity, which you have come to prize and treasure and hold dear to yourself. So the idea of losing a position which she felt was absolutely essential to her well-being, to feeling good about herself. Yes, I'm a queen. Everybody venerates me. Everybody honors me, bows down to me. Am I going to lose all that? So Mantra capitalized on that weakness that she had. Anybody in a high position has that weakness to some extent in the material world. Srila Prabhupada did not have that weakness, even though he was in a high position, because he never considered himself high. He always considered himself the servant of the Lord. He identified himself as the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And although he acted as master, his inner position and inner condition was, I am the servant of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Sri Krishna. That's what my actual position is. So he could never be affected by these things. But a person who has some materialistic mentality can be affected. So Mantra worked Kaikeyi up into such a fear, such an anxiety, such uncertainty, such doubt, that she actually lost complete belief in the glory and greatness of Lord Ram, and considered that maybe, she suspected, maybe he will do to me and Bharat what Mantra has just eluded. That I have to protect. But how can I protect my position? How can I protect Bharat? She said, it's possible maybe Ram will try to kill Bharat, because Bharat is just as powerful as Ram. Bharat has the qualities of Ram. Bharat could rule the kingdom, then why not Bharat? But how could we do it? So then Mantra, in her very, very sleazy way, snake-like way, said, don't you remember many years ago when your husband went out to battle and fought with the gods? Not against the gods, but with the gods, against the demons? And you accompanied him? And on the battlefield, that Shambhara, he shot some arrows into Dasharatha, and he knocked him unconscious, and he was almost as good as dead. And what did you do? You climbed onto the chariot, you took the reins, and you drove the horses off the battlefield, and you nursed him back to health. Do you remember that time? Well, yes, how could I forget such a time? And do you remember what your husband said to you? No. What did he say? He said, I will grant you two wishes, two boons. And if you ask for them, I will grant them to you. You have saved my life. Do you remember that? Oh, yes, now I remember. Do you remember what you said? No, not now. I will take them at a later date. That date has come. That date is today. Well, what should I say? What should you say? You are dumber than I actually thought. This is how she was talking to him. You are so stupid. What should you ask? What you should ask is two boons. The first of which is that we've got to get rid of Lord Ramachandra. We've got to get him out. 14 years in the forest. Everybody will forget him then. And your Bharat will become the king. Can we pull that off? Pull it off, it's yours. All you have to do is ask for it, and you will have it. Yes, I will ask for it. Try to realize, child, your life is in jeopardy. Your son's life is in jeopardy. Your position is in jeopardy. You're about to fall. Don't you feel any grief? Don't you feel any sorrow? Doesn't it bother you? And then after that she said, yes, it does bother me. I don't want to die. I don't want to fall. I want my son to be king. And she worked her up into the... So you go into the sorrow room, the grief room, they called it. You go in there and you start crying. Get your old clothes on. Take off all this jewelry and throw it on the floor. Take your hair and tousle it, mess it all up, and throw yourself on the floor and start pounding with your fist. When your husband comes in, let him see you in that horror-stricken position. So she did that. And when Dasharatha came in, he was looking for his queen, and he met a servant at the door. But where is Kaikeyi? Well, she's in the sorrow room. The sorrow room? What has she got to be sorrowful about? Ram's going to be the king. She should be jumping up and down and applauding. Sorrow room? What is she sorrow? I'm going in to see her. So he went in to see Kaikeyi there. And there she was, lying on the floor like a half-dead bird. And she was just there, crying and moaning and grieving. Says, my dear, what's wrong? What's the matter? You're feeling some pain maybe in your stomach? Or maybe in your head? In your neck? You can offer obeisances to Shishi Gornitai Ki. Should I continue now or wait till all the curtains are open? What is your procedure? Continue? Yeah, okay. In New York, and all the curtains they open almost simultaneously. So what to do? So he asked me, I will get my best Ayurvedic physicians, and they will give you whatever herbs are necessary to cure your situation. Rest assured, I will make sure that you are feeling fit, because Ram's coronation is coming up in just a day or so. And when he's coronated, I want you to look your best. And she continues grieving. And then, I'm not going to belabor the story much further, except to say that when he asks her what she wants, what is needed, why she's feeling so bad, she tells him what's happening. And as soon as Dasharatha hears that she wants him to banish Ram to the forest for 14 years, Sita Rama ki jai, Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So, they want to banish Ram to the forest for 14 years, and Bharat should be made the king. This is very unseemly, because the younger prince does not get to be the king unless the older prince has something very radically wrong with his mental workings or physical workings. So what to do? He said, he pleaded with Kaikeyi, please don't make me do that. But she said, you made promises to me. You said, whatever you ask, I will give you, because I had saved your life. Now you want to go back on your promise? What kind of a king are you? Posterity will know you as the Lion King, the king who lies, the king who never keeps his promise. Is that what you want? Oh, but Ram is so dear to myself, dear to you, dear to Kausalya. How can we send him to the forest? He's been living in the kingdom, in the palace for so many years. And to send him into where there's lions and tigers and snakes and boars and all of these things. How could we do? How can you even suggest such an idea? Yes, you don't want to keep your promise. That's it, isn't it? So she harassed him in that fashion. And finally, he just broke down crying. Finally, Ram was called. Now this is very wonderful what's coming. So Kaikeyi said to Sumitra, which was the charioteer of King Dasharatha, go call Ram. Ram was brought. Kaikeyi told Ram exactly what had happened. So when Lord Ramchandra heard that his father had made those two promises, and that the promise that he had to keep was the blessing that Kaikeyi requested, which was he should go to the forest and live in the forest for 14 years, and Bharat should become the next king. Well, in many kingdoms, when princes are materialistic, they would not like such a decree as this. But Ram's position was that he took the position of one completely detached from the position of prince or king. He said, Madam Kakai wants me to go there? Consider me gone. Dasarath wept. He says, but how could you do this? Why should you go? You didn't make the promise. I made the promise. So you can refuse. He says, no, I can never refuse. Anything that I would do must reflect well on you. If it doesn't reflect well on you, I could not live with myself. So if I don't keep your promise, then the whole world will look down upon you, and our dynasty will be tainted with disrespect. People will scorn us. How could I live with myself knowing this to be true? So Dasarath kept asking him, please don't do it. Now, why was Dasarath asking him to not do this? It's because he was very much attached to Lord Ramchandra. And in this case, normally it's not good to be attached to your sons or your daughters. Attachment is not a good thing. But Ram is the Supreme Lord of the universe. So to get attached to Lord Ramchandra is a very blessed thing. And this happened earlier on when the sage Vishvamitra wanted Ram to come and help him to get rid of a few demons who were interfering with the sacrifices. Again, Dasarath, he had made a promise to Vishvamitra, I'll give you anything you want. And then he said, I want Ram to help me. No, not Ram, please, not Ram, don't take him. He wanted to protect Ram, preserve him, make sure that he was not in any way sullied or harmed or attacked. He wanted to keep him in good condition, good health. But Ramchandra, Dasarath didn't know the power of his own son because he was in the paternal ras of this is my son and he needs me to help him. Actually, it was the opposite way around. Dasarath needed Ram to help him become more spiritual. So it was this idea of parting. It was the idea of losing his son. It was the idea of being separated. Love in separation can tear your heart apart. When your son is going to be taken away and you won't see him, you saw him every day as he was growing up. You looked at his beautiful lotus-like eyes. You hugged him. You smiled with him. You taught him how to pull the bow and how the arrow and how to shoot. It was such wonderful camaraderie. How many of you have sons? Any of you have sons? Okay, so you know there's a camaraderie which develops as you're growing up. And it's so sweet and so warm and so loving. And it's something that you want to continue. And here Ramchandra is about to leave for 14 years. Dasarath is thinking, I could not survive one day, let alone 14 years. It's impossible. So there we have a very interesting aspect of his psychology. He's attached to Ram. And that's a good thing. Because when he dies, he's going to die with Lord Ramchandra in his heart, fully blazing. He's going to die out of separation soon. So what happens is Lord Ramchandra, without even the slightest hesitation, without even the slightest doubt. He says, Mother, Kakai, he says, I'll be out of your sight very shortly. Let me go and get the bark. And this the bark that they have, it's like a cloth. You see them wrapped around palm trees. And so they wrap that around themselves. It's kind of like a kurta of a sort. So, gumsha. So he did that, and then he went to Sita. And he said to Sita, because we're seeing some very interesting aspects of Vedic psychology here. So he goes to Mother Sita and he says, my dear Sita, you've been so dear to me all these years. I want to thank you so much for what you have done, how you have helped and assisted me in my in my service here. But I'm sorry to have to bring you this news that I will have to leave you for 14 years. She said, what? So he says, yes, I have to leave you, 14 years. And he explains what she says. She says, there is no such thing as you ever leaving me, because I will never leave you. I am like a leech on you. I will hang on you, stay with you, wherever you go. He said, you are brought up as a princess in a palace. Look at your dainty feet. You can't walk on the, with the brambles and the straw and the pebbles of the forest. He says, you're used to smooth marble. That's where your feet walk. She says, I don't care where I walk as long as I walk behind you. And he tried to convince her that she should not go to the forest with him, because it would be tough, difficult, and he didn't want her to complain. He didn't want to have to send her home. She said, I will never go away from you. When I married you, I took a vow that just as where you walk and your shadow falls, I will be that shadow. I will never disassociate myself with you. When you have difficulties, trials, and tribulations, and problems, they will be mine as well. I will never live in a palace while you live in a forest. Forget it. I'd rather be dead, she said. So he saw that there was no two ways about this. She was dead serious about going with him. There was no changing her mind. This is a strong woman, a faithful woman, a chaste woman. She has all the good qualities that every woman who admires and looks up to morality and ethics and marriage vows and respects her position as a woman. How a woman gains power and or potency through this chastity and faithfulness. She's the ideal. She had so much power that if she wanted, when she was kidnapped later on in the story, she could have burned Robin to death in just 1 second. She had that power. She was the goddess of fortune. But she chose not to do this. Why? So that Lord Ramchandra would ultimately rescue her and get the credit. Why should she take the credit of burning him to death? Everyone said, well, she's very powerful. But she wanted her husband. This is also the nature of a chaste and glorious wife, that she always wants to in some way assist her husband in gaining glory. She doesn't feel envious of him. Sometimes in the materialistic marriages, when husband is honored too much, wife is beginning to feel envious. She's not getting any honor, no glorification, nobody's applauding her, nobody's speaking her name. In a materialistic marriage, but in the spiritual type of marriage, it's the very opposite. Because spiritual world means you glorify the Lord. And she knew who Lord Ramchandra was. Anyway, so she went, and Lakshman, same story. He said, my business is, here you see ideal persons in action. Ram said, I want you to stay back. You comfort my mother, Kausalya, and your mother, who loves me also, and you will comfort your husband, Dasarath. You're needed here. He said, no, let Shatrughan, he can do that. He said, my business is to serve you. You're going to be in the forest. Why should you build the kutir? Why should you wash your clothes? Why should you do this? Why should you go climbing up the trees for coconuts? That's my business. That's my work. That's my pleasure. No, I will never leave you. I will not leave you in the forest for 1 second, having to do anything yourself when I could do it for you. And suppose some snake comes and tries to bite you. I want to be there to grab that snake and kill it if necessary. I'm here to protect you and Sita. And I want to give my life doing that. But he couldn't. There was no way to convince him to do otherwise. So here you have Ram in the center, and you have Sita, and you have the ideal brother, ideal wife, ideal king, ideal son in the form of Ramchandra. He acted so perfectly. He was not afraid of, like we say, getting his hands dirty. In fact, when he talked about the forest, he said, what's wrong with the forest? We're always living in this palace. so beautiful. You go out, like I was just coming from my room here, and I was hearing all this twittering of the bird. It's kind of like they're playing a little music as I'm coming out. So I said, wow, what a wonderful offering. The birds are twittering and tweeting about how nice it is. So he's saying the same. He's saying the birds this way, and you see the beautiful birds, they jump up and down. What is the name of the peacocks? And we'll see so many beautiful deer out there, and we'll see different types of squirrels, and it'll be wonderful. It'll be like a lark going to on a picnic. That's the way he described it, as if it was something beautiful. So they went. So the important point is the next one. Is that Dasarath was so heartbroken. And the people of the kingdom, when they heard what happened, and they saw Ram Chandra get into the chariot, because Sumitra was going to drive him to the Ganges River, so that then he would take a boat across the Ganges River, and this king of the Nishadas, his name was Guha, he would arrange for the boats and everything. So, anyway, what happened was that they got into the chariot. There was Ramchandra, there was Sita, and there was Lakshmana. And as they were driving, the people, they swarmed around the chariot. They didn't want to let them go. They said, no, 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 please, tears are flowing down their eyes and their cheeks. Don't go, we need you. We want to look at you. We want you to be the next king. We want you to rule us. There's nobody more lovable and adorable, no one more courageous and powerful than you. Please stay. So Ramchandra got up and he explained this. Look, I must go. I cannot let my father ever be thought of as an untrue ruler, as a liar. That's impossible for me. So he pounded this idea into their head until they finally got it, but they didn't want to accept it, but they got it. Because they were raised on the principle of righteousness, of truthfulness, and this was the principle of truthfulness which is put into practice here. So then, finally they got out of the kingdom. They were on their way, and Dasarath was sitting with Kausalya. And it's very interesting. He said, you know, my dear, my heart is aching so badly, I just feel like I'm going to die. And I think I am going to die soon of heartbreak. And do you know why this is happening? And she said, no, why is this happening? He said, I brought it upon myself many, many years ago when I was much younger. She says, how did you bring it on yourself? He said, well, one day I went out, I should say one night, he said, I went out into the forest and I wanted to test my archery skill, my firing the arrows at night. And I wanted to see if my skill as an archer was as good as it normally is. And the only way you can know this is by testing it. So he said, I went out and I heard a gurgling sound by the river. And he said, I was almost certain that it was an elephant drinking water. So I thought, I can't see the elephant, but I have the power, I have the ability to kill another creature just by listening to the sound. I can exactly know where it is and shoot the arrow so that it will kill that creature even in the darkness. That's quite a feat. I mean, I can't even walk in the darkness, let alone shoot an arrow that it will hit a creature that could be 100 yards away. That's not an easy feat. So he heard the sound, the gurgling sound, and he pulled the arrow, pulled the string back, shot it, and then suddenly there was a sound of, oh! I've hurt, I've hurt. What was that? Elephants don't talk. They don't make those kind of noises. This is, who could that be? Can be a human being? So then the walk, is it possible to make a little less sound there? Because it's, thank you. I'm used to the chopping. Anyway, I'll try my best. So anyway, it's much better than the kids screaming. So that's my only consolation at this moment. I'll tell you a story that happened in the Lachua about the children, and that's a whole other story, but we won't go into that because this is time for Lord Ramachandra. So what happened was that he went over to the area where he thought there was an elephant, and he saw there was a young man there, almost a boy, youth. And he looked at him, and an arrow had pierced his heart, and he was in such pain, and such agony, and such distress. Oh, Bhagavatam looked, he was paralyzed, he couldn't speak. And the boy looked up at him and said, "You are the king, and you have killed me, and I have not done anything opposed to this kingdom's policies. You have committed this offense without justification, without any right to do this. Why have you killed me? I'm going to die in a few moments. Why? It's an accident. I thought you were, it's an elephant." The boy said, "Why didn't you think? What made you think it was an elephant? It was dark." Dasarath realized that the whole thing was so irresponsible. This was an arrangement, of course, by Krishna. Intelligent, virtuous kings who have the Lord as their sons don't make dumb mistakes like that. That's not their way. They think before they act. Except in times when the Lord has a plan and he blunts your intelligence and doesn't allow you to think what you normally would. This happened with King Pariksit when he took the snake and he dropped it over the shoulders of Shamika Rishi. It happens in many different cases when the Lord wants to be use his particular devotees to assist him in his pastimes. That's what we call Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya. For example, when in the eternal world, or the gateway, when Jaya and Vijaya were there, and when the four Kumaras approached Jaya and Vijaya, they said they wanted to see the Lord. There were seven gates. Six of the gatekeepers all recognized the four Kumaras. They were famous, little five-year-old boys, but they were Lord Brahma's first sons, and they were incarnations of wisdom, of knowledge. Those two gatekeepers, they just thought they were just a bunch of little upstarts coming here to just make play. Little five-year-old kids, they said, "Why are you blocking the entrance?" "This is because you have no right to be here. We have no right to be here. We want to see our Lord." And so what happens? They cursed Jai and Vijay to become mortals, human beings. That was God's arrangement. And Lord Vishnu comes out a little later on, and he hears the whole situation. And Jai and Vijay are so repentant for having stopped them. And the four Kumaras are crying, just tears of regret for what they have done. They've cursed an innocent person. So the Lord says, don't worry about it. Please don't have any grief, because I arranged the whole thing. And we learn later in the purport, Prabhupada says, that the Lord likes a good fight once in a while. And it's a benediction to fight with the Lord. To get the opportunity to get in close, hugging, throwing, playing, giving the Lord the pleasure of fight. Sometimes women wonder, why do men always like to fight? Well, because it's in Krishna, therefore we only can do what Krishna is in him, we also manifest with him. So that's why. Of course, fighting should be under control, but sometimes we lose our control, and it's not the right kind of fighting, which results in wars and all sorts of chaos and troubles. Anyway, the young Brahmin who was there said, "Please, I came down from our little hut, which is just maybe about 30 yards away. I've come down to fill up this pot of water for my blind parents. They can't see. They depend completely on me. So please go to them and give them the water and explain to them what happened. If you don't explain it to them, and my father should find out what has happened, then he will curse you terribly, because I am his and my mother's eyes, and just now you have taken their, not only their own eyes, they're blind, but now they have no one to lead them, they have no one to look, to have any hope for, because I was their pride and joy." So at that moment, the boy says, "Please, I'm in terrible pain. The arrow is just making me so pained, so grieved. Take the arrow out. I can't take it out, please. I can't stand this any longer. You did it, now relieve me." So finally took the arrow, yanked it out, and the boy made a sigh of, his last sigh, relief, death. So then Dasaratha's, he had never encountered anything like this in his life. So then he went up the hill and he went to the parents. So they heard his footsteps and they said, "Oh, our son, what has taken you so long? You never take this long to get us water. Why have you been tarrying so?" Dasaratha, he was speechless. "Why aren't you talking? How come you're not replying?" "Well, speak, I want to hear you." "Well, well, what's wrong? You don't sound like our son, you sound like an older person." So he told the story, I already told. So the father said, "You have killed an innocent child just to prove your prowess? Just to beat on your chest like a gorilla to prove that you're so powerful at the expense of my son's life? You should be ashamed of yourself. This is so unseemly, improper." Dasaratha apologized profusely. "I am so sorry. You are right. I should never have done this. I wish I could bring your son back to life, but I can't. I will do anything for you. Tell me, I plead, I pray to you." He said, "Bring us to our son. We will light a funeral pyre, and we will enter that fire with him." Oh, more grief to see these two blind parents to enter the fire where their dead son was going to be burned. Just before they stepped into the funeral pyre, the father said, "Someday in the future, just as I feel so much grief from the separation from my son, you too will one day feel similar grief from the separation of your son. And just as I am about to die, you will similarly die of grief. Now, light the fire." And that was the end of that. So this story was being told to Kausalya, and he said, "My dear," he's moaning there, "now you know why I have to die. I brought it upon myself." So this again is an interesting aspect of Yoga Maya. Why? Because It's like a movie script. Ramchandra, he wrote the script. He produced the script, the story. He directed it. And he acted in it as well. He's what they call an auteur. He does everything. So, in order for this to happen, Dasarath had to do these things. And these boons had to be given to Kakai, and she felt compelled, she felt that she felt so much fear that she had to demand these boons. And Lord Ramchandra had to show what an ideal son was like. That was, Krishna says, whenever and wherever there is decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants. I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Lord Ramchandra had appeared to kill Ravan and his brood, all the Rakshasas and demons. That was his. So this would set this whole beautiful, wonderful, glorious story into motion. So by Lord Ramchandra going to the forest and Sita going with him, So Dasarath, what happened was he died of grief, thinking of Lord Ramchandra. So ultimately he would go back home, back to Godhead, when Lord Ramchandra would leave. Initially he would go to a heavenly planet, and he would wait, and then when it was time for Lord Ramchandra and Lakshman and Shatrughan and Bharat and all of them to leave, he would go with them, and the whole family, they would all go, and even the monkeys, they would go also. Those monkeys who were dead, they were brought back to life by this Sanjeevana herb that Hanuman, he brought the whole mountain herb. Everybody, all the dead monkeys smelled it somehow or another. They came back to life and they went back home, back to God. So, this is all, as I said, a wonderful, interesting arrangement. And Dasarath, dying out of love and separation for Lord Ramchandra, what could be better than this? And Sita, when she was kidnapped by Ravan, what could be better than that? She was dying of separation from her beloved. And although Ravan was bothering her and trying to seduce her, he never laid his hands on her. Does anybody know why? Yeah.
He was cursed by a heavenly woman that if he tries to, without the consent of another woman, if he tries to molest her, then he would die.
Exactly, yes. He was under a curse, so he couldn't touch her. But he promised that if she did not submit to his will within 1 year's time, he would have somebody else kill her, and she would become his lunch. Because Rakshasas, they eat human beings. That's their, you know, it's like we like sweet rice, they like human flesh. That's their favorite dish. Especially if it's a holy man's flesh. So that's why Ramchandra came, to protect the holy men. They were eating these holy men. Of course, the holy men, they were dying thinking of Lord Ramchandra. They would go back to Godhead. So it's like the express train or the express plane back to Godhead. You get a Rakshasa to kill you, whoosh, you're out. Finished. What happened was that that was the means by which King Dasarath, he would die. Are there any questions so far on these different points that I have been making on showing how they illustrated the wonderful characteristics and qualities and attributes of great personalities? How we can learn from this? What could we learn from Dasarath? Well, when you're going to do something, think it through fully. Of course, he had no choice. He was under Yoga Maya. But in effect, what we're being told is when you have to go and do something in which somebody's life may be at stake, think it through. Don't just shoot. The possibility existed, didn't it, that the sound that he heard might not be an elephant? Why should it be an elephant? Or a deer? or a boar? Couldn't it possibly be a human being? Holyman lived on the bank of the Ganges? But that wasn't the Ganges, it was the Sarayu. Holyman lived there. Wasn't that possible? Why didn't he have the intelligence? We must think before we act. When you make a plan, for example, you want to do Sankirtan, or you want to interest people in Krishna consciousness, we should know something about the person you're going to preach to. Or at least, for example, when people come to the New Dwarka temple, and they come to the Sunday feast, sometimes people ask me, well, how do you preach to them so that they'll come to listen to the philosophy? Because some of these people, they don't care about it. They came for the food. Food's good. So that's the only preaching they want to hear. Just give me the pakora, just give me the sweet rice, just give me the halva, give me the sabji, and I'm out. That's it. So how do you get them to listen? What is the secret? So generally speaking, when I sit down, and I'm sure some of you know this from your own experience, I don't speak for 15 minutes. I make them talk. I want to know everything about their life, and people love to talk about themselves. What could be more delightful than to just talk, to boast, to brag, to talk about their great jobs, their great salaries, and all of the things they do. So you get them to talk about all the things that they like, the things that they do. Oh yeah, I go to the ball games, I do that. So then you try to figure out ways in which you can relate Krishna consciousness to the things that they like. So once you set up a relationship, a connection, that there's a tie there, you've given them a reason to want to know about Krishna consciousness. Okay, give you an example. What about, let's just say, one of these people, every Saturday they go and they play softball, softball, it's like baseball with the batting, and he's a pitcher, and he's on a team. He's got a jacket, and the team is right now, you meet him, he says, well, we've been losing a lot of games lately. I said, well, I know how you can win. You do? Yes. I can tell you how to tune in to the supreme power. And if that supreme power can work through you, you will pitch better, and everybody on the team will hit better. Really? I said, yeah, but you just got to give it a little time. You have to be patient. So you've got him interested. So, well, tell me a little more about this Krishna. Where did he get this power? And then you get into the whole thing. Well, he didn't get it from someplace. It comes with the body. It comes, he's Satchit Ananda, Vigraha, eternality, bliss, and knowledge, absolute. So this is simply a means by which you can start to preach to a person. And that person becomes interested, and you give him the holy name, and you tell him, you start to chant this, and you will invoke that power in your life. And when you're on the pitching mound, and you're winding up, and you throw the ball, just before you throw it, you say, Hare Krishna. And watch what happens. Well, if nothing happens, you haven't lost anything. He's still chanting Hare Krishna, and he's been benefited. And if Krishna decides to bless him in order to increase his faith, then you have gotten something. Not only is he now going to come for the feast to eat, he's going to go into the temple now and chant. We've gotten him one step higher. I'm simply trying to give an example of how you can make preaching relevant to people who have no interest. Generally, it is our lack of thoughtfulness or inventiveness and compassion for those who need this holy name but are not getting it. And because they're not interested in Krishna consciousness, we're not giving it to them. So Prabhupada said he gave five characteristics of a great Uttama Adhikari devotee, if I can remember them. He realizes he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He loses interest in everything except Krishna. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always thinking of new ways to present or to transmit the holy name of Krishna. And he understands that his only business is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Such a person should be considered or should be recognized as an Uttama Adhikari, and the advanced Uttama Adhikari should be accepted as a bona fide spiritual master. Uttama Adhikari. Uttama means highest, and Adhikari means a master. So highest master, or highest master of spiritual knowledge. So that's the point. If we put into practice that which I just recorded, this is in the Nectar of Instruction. I'm not just saying this. This wasn't just came out of Srila Prabhupada in a talk extempore, but he wrote it in the Nectar of Instruction for us, the book, to read and to learn and to memorize. And that is actually true. So the more we begin to want to share this out of compassion, understanding, even tears for people who need this because they're suffering with all kinds of miseries, the more we will become more useful, not only to individuals, but the entire society. So, I've given the understanding, and I've given the psychology, and I've given the means by which we can learn from Dasarath. Think before you act, otherwise you cannot tell what's going to happen in the future, how you will be supposedly accidentally killed, not accident at all. How an ideal woman is to act when her husband is in difficult straits. How she's to befriend him and not look for a cushy situation. How an ideal brother is to act as the servant when your brother is older. How you're ready to sacrifice your life at any time. And you don't even care about it. Not only that, but you think it is a blessing to give up your life. This was Lakshman's mood. And then we come to Hanuman, who I didn't even get into. As I said, this story is so long and beautiful and juicy that I could come here every day and give it another part of it. And then you give, maybe in the future. Then Hanuman, what he did, that's a whole more another class. Just when he found Sita and what he did in Lanka. He went beyond the call of duty. He was there to just find her, jump back, tell Lord Ramchandra, she's in Lanka. True. We have to somehow get there. That's what he was supposed to do. He did more than that. He went beyond the call of duty. He burned up the Ashok forest, except the place where Sita was sitting under the Susupa tree. Nothing else was burning. Everything was burning except that. And then he burned down most of the city with his tail. Because they tried to burn his tail. And little did they know that Sita had heard about this. And so she prayed, please, O Lord, Agni, don't let Hanuman feel the pain in his tail. So he didn't feel any pain. So he used it as a torch, and he used it to burn up the city. So the city was in flames, and then he just dove into the water and shot out of the water, whoosh, over the ocean, and back. Everybody was shouting and yelling and screaming, "Hey, Hanuman, Hanuman!" So, anyway, that's it. Are there any questions or any comments that you'd like to make? Please feel free. Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
So you were talking about think before you act.
Yeah.
So, and then assuming or going by everything happens by God's will.
Yeah.
How do we relate that? I mean, you think and do it, but things are already
how do we know that we're doing God's will? Well, your business is simply to do what you know is moral, is just, and is proper. If God has another plan, that's not your business. Your business is to just, like you say, carry out the laws, carry out the ethics, carry out. If you're an incarnation of God, then you implement God's will, because you know what the will is, since, like Vyasadeva, he told Shukdev Goswami the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, knowing full well that he was going to narrate it to Pariksit Maharaj, is incarnation. You're not, I'm not. So we just do what we've been taught to do so that life goes on in a very moral, upright, righteous fashion. But we leave those things to the Lord. Sometimes what your decision will be what God wants. And sometimes it may not be. But your business is to not violate his laws or his rules. That's what the demons do. They say, well, if it'll please our sense gratification, then we can violate it. We're the Lord's. Why we should care about the Supreme Lord? He gave us intelligence. We will use our intelligence to do what we need to do. This is demoniac. Indra did that when it came to the residents of Vrindavan. They made a sacrifice to Govardhan instead of him. So he wanted to drown them all to death. This is an example of how even a demigod can become demoniac. Instead of going with the flow. There's your master, Krishna. He wants Govardhan. So why don't you just go along with it? No, I'm Indra. I'm the king of the gods. He forgot his position. So the only thing to do is to always take a humble position, to be respectful and to be honorable, and to always try to show respect for the Lord and do the very best that you can. Never violate God's laws or rules or anything like that. Even Dasarath wanted to violate them just to keep Ramachandra. But Ramachandra said, you know you must not do this, and I will not allow it no matter what you say. So that's the answer to that, yes. Any other questions? Any of you? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, we were discussing Jaya and Vijaya being cursed and it's being the Supreme Lord's plan for his to have a person to fight with.
Yeah.
But we also see in the
scripture, that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. Bhishma Dev and also Jambavan did not know that Krishna was the same Supreme Lord Ramchandra, and they were fighting for a long time.
Finally,
Jambavan realizes only one person can fight with me like this, and that should be my Lord Ram. So we see in these two cases, Bhishma Dev and Jambavan, that both of them, in their devotee role itself, they were engaging in that.
In what respect? You mentioned Jambavan. Now, what about Bhishma Dev?
Bhishma Dev also was in that chivalrous spirit when during the Battle of Kurukshetra,
yes.
He was like, he made a vow that I will make Krishna to break his vow, and I will do anything that it takes it. So he was in that chivalrous spirit. So both of them exhibited chivalrous spirit in a different way. But in the case of Jaya and Vijaya, it happened out in a different way. So can you please explain that, Prabhu, like a little more on, is there some specific reason the way it happened that way?
Which way? Because you've given three different ways now.
Bhishma Dev and Jambavan, they were still in their devotee form.
Yes.
And they still understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And they were still in that chivalrous mode, and they were participating in that rasa with the Supreme Lord.
So all I can say is that the Lord has plans, and we cannot really always fathom what his plan is. That sometimes, as I said, he will lead them in that devotee. Now, Bhishma was, when Krishna jumped off the chariot and he grabbed the wheel and he was about to fling it at Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev opened his arms wide and says, come and get me, you know, kill me. I've been waiting and hoping and longing for this. I can't think of a better, but he never had to die. Only at his will. So he willed, yes, I want to die this way. But Arjuna denied him that pleasure. He almost tackled Krishna, and he stopped his arm from moving and pulled it back, and he didn't want him to break his promise, because then everybody would say, well, God is a liar, Krishna is a liar, and he didn't want that to happen. But in the case of Jambavan, the God was just, for 28 days, he was just having a ball, just fighting away. And he's just enjoying himself every moment of it. And in the case of Jaya and Vijaya, well, we have a little different situation. Here they become three different demons. the first of which was Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and the second was Ravan and Kumbhakarna, and the third was Shishupal and Dantavakra. So they were all of a demoniac nature. They sided with the demons. So in that case, they got what they had to get. And Krishna was showing that when one acts as a demon, he's not going to last long as either Krishna or his incarnation is on the planet, because they will be killed. Whereas as a devotee, they will simply get a chance to act in a very interactive, playful, frolicsome, fistic fashion. And that's it. And when you're a demon, there's no frolic. It's you go for the jugular. You go for death. Whereas there was no question of death with Bhishma Dev, with Krishna, because it wouldn't be allowed. He wanted Bhishma to continue to live until finally his time was to be killed. And Shikhandi would be involved in that. Shikhandi was born for the death of Bhishma Dev. So that had to take place, to say so. Anyway, that's the situation there. As to why Krishna, he's a very creative person, and he has his reasons, and who am I to even guess those reasons? What gives Krishna pleasure is we can see some of the things, but that's only a fraction of what we know about that gives Krishna pleasure. We cannot know the complete capacity of his pleasure. So many things give so much different kinds of pleasures. Playing with the cowherd boys. Who would think Supreme Lord of the Universe would jump into a pond after frogs with the friends? They're jumping and trying to catch frogs, or playing blind man's bluff, you know, playing like what they call bullfighting. Who would think the Lord of the Universe would play frolic like that? How could he get pleasure out of that? That's for children. But God likes to be a child sometimes too. That's why he has his special pastimes with his little kitty friends, and he has his pastimes with Arjuna and Bhima and Yudhisthira. Different pastimes bring different mood. With Arjuna, yes, it's wrestling, going out archery, they do shooting at targets, driving in the charioteer, even flirting with the girls. They do all these things. Like their very interesting story when they were up in the mountain, Radhika Mountain. There was a big festival going on, and who should pass by but just a second. Subhadra, she was passing by with the two of her guards. They were passing, and Arjuna and Krishna were sitting on the grass. So when Arjuna saw Subhadra, she was extremely beautiful. She was young. And he couldn't take it, although he was married to Draupadi, we know that. And he also had two other wives, too, which he met in the course of his journeys. I can't remember their names. So he sees Subhadra, and Krishna's talking to him, and he's not even looking at Krishna. He's just watching her as she's walking away, you know, like an ordinary warrior might. And Krishna says, "Excuse me." So he's still not hearing. He says, "Excuse me." He says, "Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that this very beautiful, enchanting, gorgeous woman passed by. Young woman, I just couldn't take my eyes off her. Do you happen to know who she is?" He says, "Yes, I know who she is." He says, "Well, can you tell me who she is? Can you maybe set up a meeting?" He says, "Yes, she happens to be my sister." "Your sister?" He said, "I knew you had a beautiful sister, but I didn't know that was her." He had never met her, you see. And there weren't like pictures, movie pictures, you know, not like today. You know, you can send it right through the email, you can see the picture on the YouTube, or you get on Facebook or all of those, and you see the picture. Not that time. So he had never seen her. And he said, "Well, you know, she's a very beautiful woman. And I would definitely like to meet her." He says, well, she's got some bad karma. Well, what's her bad karma? Well, my brother Balaram has engaged her to Duryodhana.
Oh, no!
That's like a curse. A beautiful woman like her, and it looks like she has so many virtues, the way she walks, and she's so delicate and sweet, and all of these nice qualities which are emanating from her. He says, no, that can't be. I can't allow that. He said, well, you know, I feel the same way about it as you. He said, well, what are we going to do? He says, well, let me see. Yes. Balaram promised her to Duryodhana. Krishna didn't do that. And he felt it was a bad decision, but Balaram was the older brother, so generally younger brother doesn't say, no, this is a bad decision. But Balaram favored Duryodhana. Now, Duryodhana was very respectful to him because he was club master, taught him club fighting. And Duryodhana was a very slick operator. He knew how to act in a way which would give pleasure to Balaram. He just acted like the humblest of the humble. So as a gesture of friendship and appreciation, he offered Subhadra as to be his wife. So when Krishna heard, Arjuna says, well, what are we going to do about this? Well, we've got to rescue her. I said, what did your parents think about this? Oh, they hate it. Did they talk to Balaram? Well, they didn't want to insult Balaram because they gave him the opportunity or the authority to arrange for the marriage. So now they would be saying, well, we don't like this. It would be like going back on their word. So everyway, they were in a tight position. So they said, well, what are we going to do? So a plan came out. It was hatched. That's a whole story in itself, and it's so delicious and so delightful how Arjuna would then play the part of a sannyasi, and Subhadra would know it. Anyway, I guess I've gone way over time now. If you want me to tell it, I could do that, but I think it's...
Go ahead.
You, how many want me to tell it? Where's the temple president? I mean, I got to... do I have authority or permission?
No, I think it's fine. Yeah,
huh?
I think glasses.
That glass is still there.
I have permission? Hello? Okay, I haven't gotten it. Somebody should go and ask the temple president. Maybe she wants to do something else here. But somebody make sure I don't want to violate policy. I'm here as a guest.
It's okay.
Oh, it's okay? Okay, then it's all right. No, it doesn't conflict with anything. Okay, I'll tell that story because it's so delicious, really. Yeah, I wrote this, by the way, when I was trying to purify my heart. I would put it in a modern format. And anyway, what happened was this. There would be a... let me think. I haven't thought about it for a while. Just give me a few moments. Festival. Yes, okay. It's coming back to me now. The plot was hatched. And Krishna and Arjuna, they got together. And they said, the best thing to do is to steal her away. Because if you don't do that, then you'll never get her. He says, well, how am I going to steal her? He says, here's what we're going to do. The rainy season is coming up now, so you'll stay with me, but nobody's going to know that you're staying with me. Right at that moment, everybody knew Arjuna was visiting Dwarka. In fact, they gave him a big rousing welcome. He was an honored guest. Balaram knew he was there. Everyone knew he was there. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make an announcement in the assembly that you're leaving Dwarka. And I'll take you in my chariot to the outskirts of the city. And the impression is that you will leave town, leave city. But you really won't. What's going to happen is you will live in my apartment for the 4 months of the rainy season. And what's going to happen is you'll grow your hair nice and long, and you'll look like a sannyasi, and you'll get nice and thin, because, you know, he's got the Herculean muscles. He's got a big, you know, he's like in those physique magazines. Big, bulging shoulders. There's too much noise back there. They have to speak, otherwise I can't speak. There's too much interference. They keep it down in a whisper, please. Thank you very much. Thank you, Prabhu. So, anyway, what happened was that they did just that. So Arjuna went, and he went outside, and he got a disguise. And he got this disguise, and he came back. Nobody knew it was Arjuna, and he went to... He looked like a holy man, you know, with a wig and long whiskers. And Balaram understood that a holy man was staying with Krishna during the time of the rainy season. That often happens. Holy men, they stay in one place. They don't travel around. So 4 months went by, and then the rainy season ended. And now the plot was about to be hatched. So at the end of the assembly meeting, Krishna said in a kind of casual, offhanded way, "Well, this sannyasi who's staying with me, he's very learned, very knowledgeable. It's a pleasure to listen to him." He says, "Really?" He says, "Yes. He's going to be leaving city soon. And if I were you, I would invite him to lunch, because you don't know what you're missing." He said, "Well, I love to listen to the holy men. Why not? You know, because after all, Balaram is the Supreme Lord, Sankarshan. Why wouldn't he want to hear the great teachings of himself?" So what he does is that he says, "Well, why don't you bring him over for lunch tomorrow?" So that's exactly what happens. Arjuna comes, and Balaram, his mind is not allowed to know that this masquerading or sadhu is really Arjuna. Krishna can do this. Even when Krishna was playing the part of all the different cowherd boys, Balaram, at the end of the term, of the year, then Balaram starts to get suspicious and says, "You know, they don't seem like the regular cowherd boys." A whole year went by, he couldn't figure it out. He says, "Something very wonderful is happening. Can you tell me what's..." So what it brings out is Krishna is the supreme original personality of Godhead, and he can enable or allow even his expansions to know what he wants them to know. He can allow them to know anything and everything, or he can prevent them from knowing whatever he wants them according to his plan, which he sets in motion. That's why we call him the supreme personality of Godhead. It means that there are other personalities of Godhead, but Krishna is the supreme one. Krishna can cause his other expansions to not know something or know something as he sees fit. So here Arjuna is invited for lunch, and he comes in, and with the long beard and the long hair, and Balaram invites him and sits him down at the table. And who is going to be the servant but Subhadra? And Arjuna said, who's this young woman? "Well, she's my sister." "Well, you know, generally for sannyasis to have beautiful women in front of her is not the ideal situation." But Balaram said, "But look, she's very advanced spiritually. And another thing is I wanted to make spiritual more advancement by serving holy men like yourself. So if you please oblige me, allow her to give service and bring out the lunch and cater to whatever needs you have. She will make advancement and it will help her to become more spiritual than she even is." He said, "Well, of course, I have no problem with that." Of course he didn't. He wanted to marry her. So, anyway, what happens is that This is in the Mahabharata, by the way. It's not in the Bhagavatam. So, somebody go there, please. Tell it's too loud. Thank you, thank you. Because it competes, I can't follow my train of thought. Yeah, it's better now. It's okay now. It's all right. Thank you. Because this is a talk, and I need to follow it. There's this train of thought, and it's one thing leads to the next. So Arjuna sat, he's sitting down for lunch, and Balaram is sitting on the side, and Subhadra comes, and she brings she's bringing the prasadam, and they sit down, and then she steps back, with the servant, they step back by the wall, in case anything more is needed, the person who's sitting at the table is, waiter, come here. So she's there, and she's looking at him, and she's buying glances at him. She's saying, now he doesn't look like Arjuna at this point, because he's all bearded, and he's got all this long hair. But something about his eyes and his smile attracts her. And she's looking, and then he looks up and he catches her looking, and she looks down. And she's, maybe he saw me looking at her. He'll think I was flirting with him. Oh, that's terrible. I'm not going to do that anymore. So she keeps her eyes down, and she's hearing him converse with Balaram, and they're talking about spiritual matters. And then, but she can't resist it. She looks up again, and again his eyes go up. They meet, and she looks. Oh, you saw me again, looking at him. So she's very strongly attracted to his beauty, and to his. He doesn't speak in his normal voice. He can't do that because Balaram knows the voice of. He knows the voice of Arjuna. Arjuna talks in like a big husky warrior. Like a king, So he talks in a higher pitched voice. So that it doesn't say this in the Mahabharata, but you can just deduce it by the fact that Balaram knows what Arjuna sounds like. So he's talking in a little higher voice. So therefore, not so that he doesn't sound like a girl, but he sounds like a high pitched male. Because I don't think Subhadra would be too attracted to him if he sounded like a girl. So he still has a manly quality. So this is going on through the luncheon. She's speaking, and he's looking, and their glances catch, and she's looking down. And then finally, her heart is smitten. It's smitten means to be overtaken, conquered. She cannot get this man out of her mind. The lunch is over. Arjuna goes back to Krishna's quarters, and that night, Subhadra goes to sleep, and she can't fall asleep. She's turning and twisting and rolling over, and all she's thinking about is this holy man. And she's in complete conflict. How can I fall in love with a holy man who wants nothing to do with women? He's a sannyasi. She says, this is horrible. This is the worst thing that could ever have happened to me. There's so many nice princes, and I have to fall in love with a holy man. Oh, what a horrible karma I have. I have to talk to Krishna about this. So in the morning, she contacted, she sent a maidservant. She said, tell Krishna to come to the back where I'll meet him. I'll meet him in my garden, and I want to talk to him about the situation, because he's a master of detachment. So I'm going to ask him how I can detach my mind from this beautiful, handsome sannyasi. She's going to take lessons. He's going to give her a Bhagavad Gita lesson. So Krishna comes, and he comes, and he knows what it's all about because he's omniscient. And he says, yes, my dear beloved sister, how can I serve you? She says, I have got a problem. He says, what's the problem? She says, that sannyasi you sent over for lunch? He says, yes. She says, I'm in love with him, and I want to know how I can detach myself from him, because this is a very incongruous, conflicting situation, and I'm very embarrassed about it. He says, not to worry. Everything will work out fine. She says, work out fine. How can it work out? What, you're going to do a miracle? Like you held up Govardhan Hill? What are you going to do? You're going to make him dislike me? Is that the thing? You're going to, what are you going to do? He says, don't worry about it. Everything is in under my control. He says, yes, everything comes down. Tell me what's going to happen. She says, he said, well, just suppose. Suppose that sannyasi wasn't really a sannyasi. She says, come on, Krishna, stop playing games with me. What do you mean, wasn't really a sannyasi? What is that supposed to mean? Just suppose. Well, you're not making any sense. Suppose he wasn't a sannyasi. Suppose he was some great warrior. Would it be... What if he was that? She said, are you jesting or are you being serious? He says, no, I'm being serious. Are you saying that he's not a sannyasi, but he's really a warrior? He says, yes, he is a warrior. No. Yes. No. Yes. What warrior? Arjuna. My cousin. Arjuna? He? No, it can't be. It is me. It can't. It is. Well, she was always entertaining thoughts. She had heard so much about Arjuna with all his warrior abilities, his feats, his beauty, his handsomeness. All of these things were so, so attractive to her. And she said, what are his feelings towards me? I mean, I'm in love with him, but is he in love with me? He says, well, that was the whole purpose of the luncheon. He wanted to find out if you were in love with him. Because if you were in love with him, he wasn't going to bother with you. He said, well, give her to Duryodhana. But if she loves me and I love her, well, it's a perfect match. Now all I have to do is steal her away. So, therefore, the next thing that happened was that they have to come out with a plan, how he's going to steal her. So, the arrangement was, is that when Subhadra heard this, she was so ecstatic, so happy. Remember, she was pledged to Duryodhana, demon of demons, archdemon, and now... there was this Arjuna who loved her and whom she loved. She had a little bit of worry about one thing, Draupadi, because Draupadi was a heavy hitter. and that wasn't going to go, you know, Arjuna would have to bring her to the kingdom. And that's another part of the story, which is just as delicious as all the rest that I've been talking about. How Subhadra charms Draupadi. So, anyway, a plan was made so that there was a festival to take place at the Raivati Hill, in which the hill, which I think is a manifestation of Lord Vishnu, some aspect, and they were going to pay homage to the hill and offer worship to the hill, and then they would come back down. Now, Subhadra always had bodyguards around her. We have to understand, she's not an ordinary woman. She's a princess, in a sense. She's a sister of Krishna and so forth. Balaram's sister. So what happened is after the festival, she got on the chariot. She had guards, guards behind her. There were some guards. Let me remember now. There were two guards behind and two guards in the front on their horses. So the chariot then went down the hill. And who was standing at the bottom of the hill but Arjuna in his chariot, which was Krishna's chariot. He had borrowed it. So the chariot could not pass by because he had it not this way but horizontally. The one coming down couldn't pass. So finally the chariot stopped, and the guards, they recognized Arjuna was now no longer a long beard and no longer long hair. He looked like Arjuna, because there was no need anymore to impersonate. That was so that he could get by Balaram. So the guard said, Arjuna, you're blocking the way. what are you doing that for? He said, well, I've come to take Subhadra. Balaram has made us her guardians. He said, well, you're going to have to move aside because I plan to take her from my wedded wife. Now, she's promised to Duryodhana. Doesn't matter. Yes, it does. So he said, are you going to move aside or I will have to make you move aside? And I don't want to have to do that. So they said, look, we are paid to guard this princess. Actually, she wasn't a real princess, but like a princess. Because her father was Vasudeva, he wasn't the king, but the grandfather, who was Surasena, he was a king, you see. Anyway, they didn't want to they didn't want to surrender her. So as soon as that happened, they took out, one of them took out a bow and was about to shoot an arrow at Arjuna. Well, no sooner did he reach for the bow than he had an arrow in his hand. And then it was so painful, he just fell off his horse, and it was so sudden. Same thing with the other guard. He got an arrow right in his arm. Then the two in the back, they got arrows as well. They were all on both of all four of them laying on the floor, on the ground. So Arjuna drove his chariot forward to Subhadra's chariot, reached over, picked her up, put her on his chariot, and she's in ecstasy, you know. And then he drove away, and then there was many, many chariots behind Subhadra's chariot because they were all coming from the festival, and they saw that Arjuna was taking Subhadra away. And they would say, how could Arjuna do this? Balaram promised her to Duryodhana. This is wrong. This is immoral. This is the, you know, Krishna has arranged it, but they don't understand this. It's all very moral, because what better? This is the yoga maya, part of personification. Anyway, Arjuna, he drives away at a very fast speed. Some other gods were there. They tried to chase. They could not even come near those horses, the speed. Anyway, those other guards, they went back, along with the people who saw all this, they went back to the kingdom, and they gave the message to Krishna and Balaram that Subhadra had been, you can't call it a kidnapping, it's really an eloping. Kidnap is against your will, but when it is with your will, she wanted it, Vasudeva wanted it, Krishna wanted it, Arjuna wanted it, so you can't call that a kidnapping. When it goes against the will, like when Krishna took Rukmini, that was a kidnapping because, there are certain people that didn't want it. Shishupal didn't want it, of course. Rukmini didn't want it. Rukmini wanted it, of course. So the important point was that, this coming back to the story, they had a big assembly meeting. What was going to be done to Arjuna? And Balaram was steaming, angry, mad. There's only one thing. He got up on, they have the thrones there. In the middle throne, topmost throne, was Ugrasena. He was the king. And then Krishna would be on one side on his throne, and Balaram would be on his throne. And Balaram stood up and told the whole assembly, this Arjuna, we have shown him such hospitality. We have shown him. He doesn't know that Arjuna was the false holy man. He doesn't know that yet. That's coming up. So, we have shown him such hospitality, such kindness, and such affection. And look how he pays us back. He steals our Subhadra when I had promised him. He knew it. To Duryodhana. How dare you do this? So everybody in the assembly got up and said, yes, let's kill Arjuna. Kill Arjuna. And they're stomping. Boom, boom, kill Arjuna, kill Arjuna. They're all like that. And Krishna doesn't like to hear this. This is his friend. So Balaram says, yes, that's what we will do. If I have to go after him personally, I will get him, I will challenge him, and I will kill him. Meanwhile, change the scene, cut. Meanwhile, Arjuna and Subhadra, they're driving along, they're still, and Subhadra, she gets scared. She says, well, you know, if Balaram, when he finds out, he's going to want to fight with you. So Arjuna says, don't worry about it. I'm sure everything will work out through us. She says, what do you mean work out? Balaram is powerful. He's more powerful than you. She knows who Balaram is. He's an incarnation. So Arjuna reassures her and says, don't worry. Everything will work out fine. This has Krishna's approval. Whatever Krishna likes and approves comes out successfully. She says, well, if you say so, I'm not sure about this. Because, you know, she's a lady and she wants the marriage to happen, but she knows Balaram could get real heavy duty. Balaram's, you know, he's passionate. Anyway, what happens is that Indus is cut back to the assembly hall. And it's like a movie. So Balaram is saying, I agree, there is no other solution but to kill Arjuna and recover Subhadra. And everybody, kill Arjuna, kill Arjuna, there's a chant. And then Krishna, Balaram says, isn't that correct, Krishna? Shouldn't we do this? So Krishna says, well, how come you're asking me now this? Usually you always ask me first. And now you're asking me, after everyone's decided to kill Arjuna, now you come to me for advice? So he said, well, I'm sorry, but it seemed like that would be the way you would go also. He said, no, it's not the way I would go. He said, well, how will you go? He said, let's look at the situation realistically. Subhadra doesn't like or love Duryodhana. It would not make her happy to marry him. In fact, she would be miserable. Would you want our sister to be miserable for the rest of her life? He said, well, no, but Duryodhana is not that bad. According to you, because he tricked you, he made you think he's the humblest of the humble. And then you bought into it. And unfortunately, you gave him the wrong gift. So, next thing, Arjuna is a great warrior. If he were to marry Subhadra, would it be something bad for our dynasty? There's the Kuru dynasty, and there's the Yadu dynasty. And if the two dynasties link together as allies through marriage, is that going to weaken us or strengthen us? He says, well, of course it will strengthen us. We get the five Pandavas, we get Arjuna, we get Bhima also, we get Yudhishthira, we get Nakula, and we get everybody else there. He says, yes, that's right. So, therefore, why not just allow them to become married? He loves her. How do you know he loves her? And she loves him. How do you know she loves him? He just went ahead and kidnapped her, and they never even met. Don't be so sure. This is, what do you mean, don't be so sure? Do you remember that sannyasi who you invited for lunch? Yes. Well, that sannyasi happened to be Arjuna. Arjuna, the sannyasi? He tricked me? We've got to kill him now. he felt he was dishonored. No, it was all for fun. It was all a play. It was all a joke. And then Balaram began to see the humor of the whole situation, and he started to laugh. First a little, like, ha, Arjuna, sannyas, no. And he's guffawing all over the place. And then everybody in the assembly, they start laughing. Before you know it, the place is pandemonium laughter. And then somebody shouts out and yells, Arjuna, Subhadra, Mary, Arjun, Subhadra, Mary, and the chant goes on, and it's going louder and louder and louder and louder, and then finally, Krishna calls two officers from the army there, and he says, "Go chase after Subhadra and Arjun, and tell them that Balaram has approved the marriage, that they should come back and be married here in Dwarka. And don't worry about Duryodhana, because Balaram will take care of him." So that's what happened. They went. It was also a little suspenseful, because when Arjuna and Subhadra were on the chariot, okay, we'll wrap it up right now. Were on the chariot, what happens is they thought that Balaram had sent somebody to chase after them and kill them, but then they shouted and they yelled, "We come in peace, peace, peace," and they told them the story. They all went back, got married, and lived happily ever after. The story of Subhadra and Draupadi is another thing. I'll tell it the next time I come. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Hare Krishna. I have some of my CDs in the back for some of you who would like to get them. I have my USPs if you'd like to have those too. Please avail yourself. Many of you already got them last night, so I'll have them out again for later on. Sorry to go over time, but you forced me. Hare Krishna.
When they are here, they let me know. Okay. But then the winter time came along, and then they usually don't travel, and we didn't have time to go down there again. So
this Sunday they'll be here.
Okay, so thank you.